From West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
Support for the legislature today is provided by the following.
AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State. Online at aarp.org/WV. West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission, working to double the degrees produced annually to meet workforce demands and grow West Virginia's economy. Learn more at wvhepc.edu. The W. Page Pitt School of Journalism and Mass Communications at Marshall University, providing hands-on education in advertising, public relations, and journalism across all media platforms.
At the legislature today, senators pull money from the state's rainy day fund to pay for public defender services through the end of the fiscal year. In the House, delegates look to increase the penalties for yet another drug crime, while also attempting to boost the state's agriculture industry. And West Virginia Superintendent Dr. Michael Martirano joins us to discuss the state of public education, coming up on the legislature today. Mara. Members of both the House and Senate Finance Committees have nearly completed their budget hearings, or the presentations state agencies give each year to update lawmakers on their spending needs. After that process is complete, the chairs of the Finance Committee say they will present a budget plan to their chambers. The implications of that budget, though, are far-reaching. Here with me tonight to discuss how it will impact education is Dr. Michael Martirano. He's the state's superintendent of schools, a post he took over in 2014. Dr. Martirano, thanks so much for being here.
I'm delighted to be here. Thank you.
Well, let's start with that budget. There is some concern that lawmakers will attempt to reduce the amount of funding the state is sending down to the local level. I had the education chairs on earlier in the season, and they said we might reduce the funding, but we'll give them more flexibility in how they spend those dollars. Does that concern you at all for how local school systems pay for the services they provide?
It does, absolutely. I mean, through the years, the last several years, we've made mid-year cuts that have placed great stress on our local school systems. We have to realize that all the dollars that go to education go to pay our teachers, our staff, the transportation, all the services necessary to educate our young people. And right now, we have a number of our school systems on the watch list that could be in deficit at the end of the year. 13 counties are on the watch list. Any further cuts puts further peril in terms of our educational system, and we're trying to protect those classrooms, and I'm greatly concerned by any additional cuts.
Well, explain to us what that watch list means.
It means basically that the school systems may run out of money to provide the necessary services to educate children for 180 days, to provide 200 days of paid performance for our teachers at the local level. And so each year, our local counties have to provide a balanced budget to the state superintendent. And if it's not balanced, then the bottom line is I won't approve that if they're going to run out of money. So they have to make additional deeper cuts. They have to cut staff. They have to cut services and programs that ultimately affect the educational delivery for young people.
And that's exactly what happened in Boone County last summer. We got to a point where Boone County Board of Education couldn't pay for their school system, and they had to go to the legislature and ask for special appropriations to finish out the school year to pay their teachers.
Absolutely.
And school personnel. It's kind of a scary thing, but have lawmakers approached you to say that they're going to ask you to take cuts at the state department level?
So I have presented my budget at all the various levels through the legislative process. I've made 5 presentations in the last 2 weeks. We've presented all the cuts, and over the last several years, Building 6 is oftentimes defined as the West Virginia Department of Education. We've cut 80 positions over the last several years, and so we're down to a very lean staffing process to ensure that the services are being delivered. We're always able to look at more efficient and effective ways to use our resources. And so I'm looking at that right now to say, where can we take additional cuts if it has to occur? Everybody wants to do their part, but my ultimate goal is to protect our local level and to provide the supports necessary for our teachers, to provide the educational services for our children.
Now, Dr. Martorano, you tend to talk about if lawmakers want to cut at the State Department level, it might put some of the local services at risk, yeah. Some of the things that the State Department provides to county school systems. This year, lawmakers, though, are talking about getting rid of RESAs, the Regional Education Service Agencies, and they don't report to you. I realize right. that's not your area, but in the interest of getting rid of these support systems, I guess, does that put more pressure on the State Department?
It does. And so I think we have to be very thoughtful and deliberate in our thoughts about RESAs, recognizing that over the years they have developed into the eight different levels of which we have within the state. And they do provide services. However, there's sometimes duplicity of effort, you know, occurring in a variety of different ways. And I think that a very thoughtful, deliberate process needs to occur of how we unpack those. How can we be more efficient and effective in delivering those services that our local school systems have become dependent upon in many respects? We don't want to necessarily go cold turkey, and I think that it needs to be an opportunity to be thoughtful and think about where can we cut to be more efficient, to collaborate and consolidate effort of purpose.
Now, the recommendation to get rid of the RESAs, that actually came from a legislative audit, but it was incorporated into the governor's overarching right. education bill, which hasn't really started working its way through the process yet, but I know you've been in touch with the governor's office right. about it. They recommend getting rid of the RESAs, making changes to the state takeover process, increasing teacher pay, but I want to talk to you about one aspect in particular, and that's getting rid of the A through F grading right. scale. That's the system that was just put into place by the board to grade schools, basically tell parents how well their child's school is doing. Is it a good idea to get rid of that system, and what could be put in its place? What would you say to the governor needs to be put in its place?
Well, what I'll start by saying is that West Virginia receives close to $500 million from the federal government. And there are certain aspects of expectation of what states are expected to implement. One of those is making certain we have high standards, college and career ready standards, and West Virginia has some outstanding standards. That we have an assessment that measures what those standards are saying are going to occur in the classroom every day. And then we have an accountability system. So whether it's A to F, whether it's a five-star system or five-apple system, whatever we want to call it, we still have to have an accountability system that takes into account student performance, multiple measures that monitor whether a child is in school as far as attendance, graduation rate, it can be school climate surveys, there can be a variety of issues. So right now, we don't have to fully have that implemented until school year, it ends in 2018. And so this allows us time now to examine where we've been with our current system. The governor says that he wants to remove the A to F grading system and now allow us to develop a system that's more accountable and more in line with what our educators need to provide enhancements for performance in the classroom as well as for schools.
The governor's bill, like we said, includes that 2% teacher pay yes. raise, which is going to be difficult in this budget year, but it links to this idea of vacancies yep. in state classrooms, and that number is growing. Can you talk to us about that?
I am greatly concerned, Ashton. I mean, one of my biggest issues is I never raise the word crisis unless it's an absolute crisis. For the last 3 years of serving as state superintendent, we've seen exponentially the number of our vacancies increase. We are now at 718 vacancies across the state, and not one county is exempt. That means that we don't have certified teachers in all of our classrooms. And if we're really about improving education, we need to ensure that every one of the children in West Virginia has a high quality teacher, highly certified, highly effective. And we need to pay them respectable wages. We are number 46 in the nation as far as our average teacher salaries. That's abysmal, and that's a major concern. We're at a disadvantage in terms of our recruitment efforts, our retention efforts, and it plays out differently across the state. I always talk about the Eastern Panhandle. We have a number of our teachers who are living in West Virginia, but are teaching in Maryland and Virginia, going right across the line and making more money as a result. It's a very competitive business. There's a shortage nationwide. There's a shortage all through in terms of our critical areas and our geographical isolated areas. So I am greatly concerned. I'm thrilled that Governor Justice has put a 2% increase as far as the raises that are necessary. But again, that's a drop in the bucket in terms of where we need to go to increase our level of competitiveness. And so I'm very concerned about that as a way of how we incentivize in the future to bring teachers in. I'd like to establish something very similar to the Peace Corps. Bring in what we would define as a teacher corps. Bring young teachers out of college and incentivize by assisting them in paying off their student loan if they would give us 3 to 5 years of their time in our critical isolated areas geographically, as well as our critical need in terms of our subject areas, special education, science, and math. It's a critical concern.
Dr. Martirano, we thank you so much for your time today, but I also want to thank you for your service here to West Virginia. You'll be stepping down from your position here at the end of the fiscal year, so thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Senators acted quickly today on a bill to fund the state's public defender services. Each year for the past several years, the group has returned to the legislature asking for additional funds. The more than $15 million approved by the Senate today will fund that program through the end of June this year. Senators also spent time today debating a bill that makes changes to the way some employees will pay their union dues or club fees. Senate Bill 239 would require an employer to have the written consent of an employee to withhold any amount from their paycheck for contributions to a political candidate or candidate committee. That consent would have to come through a form submitted to the Secretary of State's office and is only good for 12 months.
A person has to authorize that in writing every year if it's going to continue or occur.
Senate Judiciary Chair Charles Trump explained the legislation on the floor today. Aside from the usual withholdings that pay for, say, taxes or an employee's health insurance, union dues or club memberships are sometimes paid through similar withholdings. And those groups do sometimes use the funds for political purposes. Without written permission, an employer could be penalized for deducting the contributions from employee paychecks. But Trump says under the bill, employers could choose not to do the deductions at all.
I think they'd have the right to say whether it's dues for an administrative association or, I know lots of employers, public and private, set up for their employees, United Way campaigns, where employees are given a small amount out of each check over the course of 26 pay periods. An employer, I think, in my opinion, an employer could say, no, we're not doing it.
Democratic Senator Mike Romano says while the political usages of union dues or membership fees to professional organizations might be easy to link to political activity, there are other deductions that are less clear. Employers make deductions from paychecks to cover health insurance premiums or to make contributions to retirement accounts. And Romano says many large companies also lobby lawmakers or contribute to political campaigns. He questioned Trump.
If they're using any part of the deduction that I pay, whether it's an investment house or it's a health insurance company or it's a life insurance company, if they're using any part of my employees' withholding for political activities, then we have to fill out the form.
That's what the law would say, but I don't think that's going to apply to a health insurance premium, or the other example you gave was a retirement account. If you're withholding, if I were your employee, just gave me a cold chill. If I were your employee and you were withholding money from my paycheck for my retirement benefit, you wouldn't have to get any form about political activity regarding that.
Whether they are covered under the bill or not, Romano says, he urged Trump to concede that filling out the additional forms and keeping track of them was a burden for any employer, whether in the public or private sector. Senator John Unger also questioned Trump about the need for such a change. He says Republican members of the chamber have consistently backed bills that remove government interference from business, and this does the opposite.
Why are we now interfering with private sector contracts when we don't even have the capability to enforce what we're putting in place and requiring them to do? So I'm confused with the message we're sending out from this chamber.
I hope to be able to help the senator with his confusion. I don't believe we are requiring more. I think we're requiring less. I think we are doing exactly with this what we did with wage bonds. We're saying to employers and employees, but employers, it's up to you. It's up to you whether you want to follow a program where these sorts of deductions will occur from employee paychecks. I think this bill alleviates, potentially, the burden of employers who choose not to participate.
Unger also questioned the financial implications of the bill. Trump says he does not believe it will cost the state any additional money to enforce the new permissions, but Unger argued the Senate's Judiciary Committee did not specifically ask the state agencies charged with carrying it out if they would be able to enforce it. Unger moved to have the bill sent back to the chamber's Finance Committee, but Senate Finance Chair Mike Hall says that would only clutter the process.
We've only got 60 days to get a budget out of here. People are complaining about the fact that, you know, we're focusing on this budget. And to take committee time and resources to do this, if we did this with comparable bills that appear to have no fiscal implication, which there are many. Now, you could argue maybe any sort of tort law or whatever might have some sort of fiscal implication along the journey, but it's just not quantifiable. It's, in this case, I would just challenge the fact that this particular bill needs to come into finance.
Unger's motion was overruled on a 21-12 party line vote. That was the same vote the bill ultimately received. It now goes to the House of Delegates for its consideration. Members of the House have considered a number of bills this legislative session that increase the penalties for breaking various laws. At least three of those bills have focused on drug crimes, which Republican lawmakers say is in response to the state's substance abuse epidemic. Liz McCormick joins us with more.
According to the West Virginia Health Statistics Center, at least 818 people in the state died of a drug overdose in 2016, a nearly 13% increase over the previous year. The center also reports 86% of those deaths in 2016 were linked to at least one opioid. Those growing numbers are why Republican lawmakers want to increase the penalties for bringing drugs into West Virginia, which is the purpose of House Bill 2579. Members in the House got into a heated debate today over House Bill 2579. It increases the minimum amount of jail time attached to a drug trafficking offense or someone who gets caught bringing drugs into the state. The minimum sentence would increase from 1 to 10 years, the maximum from 15 to 30 years. A judge would have the option to fine the offender $25,000, incarcerate, or both. A handful of members in the House who spoke against the bill argue the penalties are too high and would end up catching addicts rather than the traffickers from out of state, like Democratic delegate Isaac Spinagle from Pendleton County, who spoke against the bill.
So if you have a kid that's an addict and goes next door, grabs prescription drugs, comes back to a party, and they spread it around, they've just committed this offense, and they're looking at a minimum of 10 years to 30 years in the penitentiary. That's outrageous. Let me get, just so we understand, so when I keep saying 10 to 30 years, let me go over some penalties that have long been in our books. So you understand the sentences that we usually, by proportionality, which my good friend says back there, for violent crimes, for theft, murder in the second degree, 10 to 40 years. Murder in the second degree, 10 to 40 years. And we're getting right past out of 10 to 30.
Those opposed to the bill also argue the state can't afford the additional cost of keeping offenders in prison for the longer sentences. The West Virginia Department of Corrections says it costs the state almost $30,000 per year to incarcerate one individual. Delegate Mike Pushkin also opposed the change to the state's sentencing guidelines.
We're going to be raising our sentencing guidelines to actually higher than the federal guidelines, where a lot of these, you know, kingpins and the people that we'd really like to target right now would be tried in federal courts. And if convicted, they would be housed in federal facilities. It was mentioned before about the tragedy that happened in Huntington, where we had so many overdose deaths in a particular weekend. The person who brought those drugs in is now serving time in a federal penitentiary. He got 20 years in a federal penitentiary. He's not being housed in one of our facilities because he was tried in a federal court. So basically, one of the things that this bill does would be to create an unfunded mandate.
Supporters of the bill argue the increased penalties will be a deterrent and help keep dealers out of the state, protecting West Virginia citizens, like Republican delegate Ray Holin of Wirt County. He's a retired West Virginia State Police Sergeant and says increasing the penalties is the right way to go.
You go to arrest these drug dealers, which I have plenty of them, and you tell them, you're facing 3 years. They laugh at you. I can stand on my head for 3 years. Now, what kind of message is that sending to them? I'll get out in 3 years and I'll do it again. If we do not increase this and hold a bigger hammer over their head to try to get cooperation to catch the bigger fish, per se, then we're losing. We have to have leverage to do our job and to let the police officers do their job and the prosecutors and the judges.
Delegate Matthew Rohrbach, a Republican from Cabell County and a sponsor of the bill, says the bill isn't perfect, but it's a start.
I want to remind you what this bill is about. It's about transporting into this state, our state, West Virginia, a controlled substance with the intent to deliver or the intent to manufacture. That's it, folks. Now, we've heard a lot of horror stories about how this can catch a lot of small fish. I tell you, for those horror stories to be true, what you have to believe is you have to have no faith in our judicial system. You have to not trust our prosecutors, who are elected officials, not trust our judges, who are elected officials, not trust our state Supreme Court, who are elected officials. I tend to have faith in those people.
After an hour of debate, House Bill 2579 passed 88 to 10 and moves across the rotunda to the Senate.
Unlike the House, the Senate does not have a committee specifically assigned to taking on substance abuse bills. Today's bill and the others to increase penalties for drug crimes will likely be considered by the chamber's Health and Judiciary Committees. Members of the House are also looking for ways to help the state's agriculture industry grow. Liz McCormick also reports on a bill that would require the state to purchase more locally grown foods.
House Bill 2566 creates the West Virginia Fresh Food Act. Members of the House's Agriculture and Natural Resources Committee discussed the proposal this morning. As introduced, the bill would require state-funded institutions to purchase at least 20% of their produce from West Virginia farmers. Newcomer Delegate Robert Thompson, a Democrat from Wayne County, is the bill's lead sponsor.
Not only are you cutting out transportation costs, you're providing an economic stimulus for farmers in the state. And you're also helping to reduce the possibility of contamination as well.
Members of the House's Agriculture Committee were concerned about the drastic increase being required immediately and amended the bill today. The bill now allows institutions to gradually increase their in-state purchases, starting at 5% and reaching 20% over a period of 4 years if it's economically feasible. Thompson supported the amendment and says the issue is one that impacts his district.
We have a very big movement in my county, Wayne County, to revitalize the agricultural economy in our region, especially the southern coal fields where we've had a lot of economic hardship lately.
Thompson says agriculture is one of the quickest ways West Virginia can improve its economy by both saving money and providing jobs. The bill passed out of committee without debate and goes on to House Finance for further consideration. For the legislature today, I'm Liz McCormick in the House.
We take a look at a mix of new and returning faces tonight on this edition of Meet Your Lawmakers.
Glenn Jeffries is a first-term senator from Putnam County. He's a Democrat and represents the state's 8th district. Jeffries was elected in 2016 and is a contractor. This is his first time holding public office. Joe Ellington is a Republican from Mercer County. He represents the state's 27th House of Delegates district. Delegate Ellington was elected in 2010. He serves as the chairman of the House Health Committee and Committee on the Prevention and Treatment of Substance Abuse. Marty Gearhart represents the state's 27th House of Delegates district. A Republican, he is from Mercer County. Delegate Gearhart was elected in 2010 and serves as the chairman of the House Committee on Roads and Transportation. John Schott is a Republican from Mercer County. He was elected to the House in 2008, appointed to the Senate in 2010, and won re-election to the House in 2012. Schott serves as the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee.
Tomorrow on our show, lawmakers are inching closer to the halfway point of this legislative session. House Speaker Tim Armstead and Senate President Mitch Carmichael join us to discuss the progress of their chambers so far and their hopes for the remainder of this session. And remember, you can watch the legislature at work live every day on the West Virginia Channel. Tune in at 11 a.m. to watch the House and Senate floor sessions, or catch them as they're rebroadcast each evening at 7. Those are also available streaming online at wvpublic.org. This has been the Legislature Today. I'm Ashton Mara. Thanks for joining us.
Support for the Legislature Today is provided by the following.
AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State. Online at aarp.org/WV. West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission, working to double the degrees produced annually to meet workforce demands and grow West Virginia's economy. Learn more at wvhepc.edu. The W. Page Pitt School of Journalism and Mass Communications at Marshall University, providing hands-on education in advertising, public relations, and journalism across all media platforms. From West Virginia Public Broadcasting.